Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar-Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 460, Red Directive.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And we're steaming full steam esteem into Season 5 of Discovery.
Steam is steaming to the top.
That's not smoke, Superintendent, etc. Gotta say, right out of the gate,
steamed Star Trek.
Right out of the gate, like I was riding the high of the end of season four. Like they figured it out, they finally got it.
It's like, all right.
It's not a turd. It's not like, oh, this is gonna be a terrible season. It's not like, I don't know. The Red Angel season seemed pretty obvious, pretty early.
Yeah.
But, well.
I sure found a lot of this episode annoying, I'll tell you that much. We'll get into it.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, like, we try to keep the real world out of this because, look, we have a nice little pocket of fantasy once a week, but I'm sure our annoyance is partially related to everything. Like, it's hard not to bring a little of that here, so maybe it's some of that, but definitely... No, it's definitely the children.
Yeah. No, I get to look out the window every day and find out whether I'm illegal or not. So that's fun.
Yeah.
Great. For a variety of reasons.
Super. Anyway, let's talk about this, which was only mildly annoying in comparison to what we're dealing with now. And the episode is called Red Directive, already off to a wonderful start.
God, this show loves the word red.
It doesn't. Well, it does with the Red Angel. I guess you're right. I think you were thinking of the Red Matter because you keep thinking this show and the Abrams movies are, but they're not. All right, here we go. My hopes were high at the end of the previous season that maybe the show had finally figured out how to put tedious cliches aside and chart its own course. So when the episode opened with a ridiculously impossible action sequence followed by an I bet you wondered how I got here backtrack, it occurred to me that maybe I was being a bit hasty. Said action sequence involved Captain Michael Burnham in a spacesuit, riding on the outside of a starship going warp, and yeah, okay, I suppose I did wonder how she got there. But then it turns out it's just because Discovery was chasing two criminals who were in possession of this season's MacGuffin. Some kind of Romulan puzzle box that made me think, well, Maggie's definitely going to make some Hellraiser reference here, and let me just check the shared document where we keep our notes, and yep, there he is. That's Pinhead. Hi, Pinhead. Oh, and while I'm here in Maggie's notes, I want to make sure we don't lose this amazing joke she made while everyone discovered a skeleton aboard that Romulan ship where the puzzle box came from. Take it away, Maggie.
I believe you're referring to the Romulan cryptkeeper. Welcome to the neutral bone. We've activated our cloaking death vice.
Yeah, this should have been your summary for that. That was amazing. Thank you. Turns out that puzzle box wasn't the actual MacGuffin, though. The actual MacGuffin is a Grail diary that will lead everyone to, I don't know, untold treasures, unfathomable weapons. You know, the usual stuff we spend six episodes jerk-assing around in space before the story finally begins. And boy, does this episode contain some primo jerk-assing, both in space and on a planet. Michael chases the two dumb criminals as they flee the Romulan skeleton's ship, and we catch up to her thing from the beginning. Then they lose the criminals because the USS Antares, run by Captain Rayner, shows up and keeps making Discovery hilariously punch itself like an annoying older brother. Then lots more jerk-assing happens. I mean, lots more. As Michael, Book, and Rayner head to Jakku from Force Awakens and remain perpetually two steps behind the aforementioned dumb criminals. Also, a bunch of people are nearly killed in the process, like a whole city. As the criminals escape, Michael replicates herself a hat, which she then throws on the ground and stomps on in frustration. Another considerable source of frustration for her is the fact that this entire mission was the titular Red Directive, given to them by Dr. Director David Cronenberg. This means nobody gets to know a damn thing about what they're chasing and why, or why they're endangering an entire city full of people. And because Michael has zero tolerance for anyone but her having a secret agenda that endangers lots of people, she starts Stamets working on retrieving some data to help her figure this out, and Tilly, remember Tilly? Working on the rest. She then confronts Dr. Director David Cronenberg, who is somehow not upset that she ignored orders and secretly uncovered the details of a highly classified mission. This, I suppose, is in the finest tradition of Starfleet, ends, means, etc. Then Dr. Double DC fills in the missing gaps. They're chasing a famous Chase from Star Trek history. No, not Chase Masterson, who played the lead of the Dabo Girl. I'm talking about The Chase, one of my top five TNG episodes. Someone is after technology that belonged to the progenitors, that ancient race who was responsible for everyone in our galaxy looking basically the same. Oh, and I forgot to mention that we met a data-style android named Fred in this episode. This led to a Soong name drop, and let me just check Maggie's notes here again. Yep, turns out we're both pretty mad about that, too.
Stop talking about him. I'm so tired of him.
We both went all caps and like, fuck off with the Soong bullshit. It made me happy.
Like, when the dude shows up and it's just like, oh, he's like a data-style android, that's kind of an interesting alien.
They also, cast a guy who looked a bit like Spiner. Like, in the Data makeup, he looked a lot like Data and acted a lot like Data. It was a good cast.
I was like, okay, yeah, it's been like however, like 800 years or whatever. Yeah, like, there's a bunch of these guys running around. It's just another race. And then, first of all, he was real annoying. And then,
I didn't find him that annoying.
Oh, God, I found him so irritating. He just starts, like, listing off stuff about the two guys' names, who I also found irritating.
Well, yeah, he's like season one Data. But anyway, go ahead.
And then they get his body back up to Discovery so that Stamets can look at it and go, oh, a Soong-type android. That's a guy who everyone remembers, because we won't let anyone forget about him, because Brent Spiner is clawing at the door to play another goddamn person from this family.
Also, they look at the serial number and it says AS something something. And they're like, well, that must mean Alton Soong. Yeah, because there's nothing else in the English language that could start with A and S.
Yep.
And also, I thought Noonien Soong was the famous one.
Yeah, right. Like, no, they're all famous.
Alton, if I remember correctly, was his son, who was in the Picard episodes, who he did some stuff, but like...
I mean, I guess he popularized fucking Data. Yeah, but also, I don't know.
Remember, there was a synth ban. Like, there weren't any. And in fact, the dumb criminals mentioned this. They're like, oh, you know, you guys are illegal. If you don't help us out here, we're going to report you.
Oh, no. Please do not report me.
Like, because remember...
I'll call for help on the phone in my chest.
No, that was just a dream, Maggie.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. There's also no cellular peptide cake with mint frosting.
Oh, man.
Only a dream. All right. Let me get into my bad thing.
Tell me your bad thing.
The dumb criminals that I mentioned are named Maul and Locke. First of all, terrible. They look, act, and talk like characters from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I liked that show. I still like that show, despite the very problematic creator. I can look past that, and I can still enjoy it. It was formative. It's still pretty good. It holds up all right. But it was 25 years ago. The cute, sort of gothy, punky-looking, young but tough, like, lady, and then her monster boyfriend, like,
That happened all the time on Buffy.
And it's a pretty, like, and that show didn't invent it. It's just my go-to for when you're in nerd stuff. That's, you know, the main thing. And, like, you said Natural Born Killers. I could see that. You had also almost mentioned Bonnie and Clyde, and that was my thought as well. Like, it's they're character types that go back a long way. The two, the couple who are also outlaws, but it's so boring.
It very much felt like when, like, whoever was writing this going, and I'll do a Natural Born Killers thing, but one of them will be like, one of them will be like a big alien guy.
Okay.
No one's ever done that before. Everyone's fucking done that before, my dude.
And it's not even like, if that was where you started and you came up with something cool, that's fine. But she just looked like new Nurse Chapel on Strange New Worlds. And like, we already got one of those.
Yeah.
She's Nurse Chapel. Like, we didn't.
Stole her wig from What's-Her-Face from Blade Runner.
Yeah. And it's just so tedious. And I know these two aren't going to be the main villains. I know they're going to report back to some villain. Mm-hmm. And I say this all the time, but you guys suck at villains. Last season worked because Tarka was kind of the villain, but the main, like, the main thing you were trying to stop wasn't.
Yeah.
So, but this is going to be, we're going to get the weapon and we're going to, like, okay, again with this.
I also just, I always feel like if Starfleet is fighting, like, some kind of, like, base level, like, criminal, Mm-hmm. Like, I always feel like that criminal is so completely outclassed, and like when they managed to bamboozle Starfleet, it's like, really, guys? That guy got away from you? Really?
I don't know. We see how it happens in this episode, and this kind of ties to your bad thing.
Oh my God. Okay. So there's a thing that the military have that you might have heard of, and it's called the chain of command. It's this thing where when there's a mission, everyone in the room knows exactly who's in charge so that, oh, say, you don't have two captains getting into a fucking dick measuring contest over who, over what they should be doing when something is time sensitive. It's a really useful thing to have, and much better than extremely irritating bickering and a completely unnecessary action sequence used to pad out the back half of the episode.
I was also irritated by this, but I actually also kind of liked it.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. One, because Michael's right in the middle of her insane, I'm just riding a ship that's going warp, which was pretty crazy. And then he comes in and has a different plan, and the two plans are at odds, and the guys get away. And it's like, oh, you don't like when someone comes in and unilaterally says, I'm not going to do what you say, I'm going to do what I want. Like, kind of making Michael deal with someone like her. Like, I didn't hate that. And also, something I didn't touch on in my summary is Book has been off doing his community service, and it's been some months. We don't know exactly how long. If they said, I didn't.
No, I was looking for it too. So
it's been a while. Let's say somewhere between 6 months and a year is what it felt like. And she and Book have not spoken, and they're both like, you should have called me. Well, you should have called me. And it's cute because these two have actually had a pretty good sort of grown-up relationship, and this is a weird sort of teenagery throwback thing that makes total sense for them. Yeah. And they're trying to work this out, and the whole time this irritating captain is there cock-blocking it, and I don't know, I kind of liked that.
Could you two stop working on your relationship and start doing what I tell you?
Yeah, but see, we did this together for a year. We can work on our relationship and, like, solve the problem at the same time, but not if you're here.
No, I'd rather be very irritating.
And he was very irritating. It's like, we talked all the whole time during season three of Picard about how annoying Shaw was, but also how kind of likable he was too.
Yeah.
This guy didn't have that quality. He had the irritating part without the charm.
That was my first thought. I'm like, okay, well, are they going to make him likable? Not in this episode.
No.
I guess we'll
But again, he felt like so many Starfleet captains, including the one we follow on this show.
Mm-hmm.
He just did what he wanted, and he's like, my engineers will figure this out. You stay out of the way. And it's like, if we were on his side, yeah, Michael would be an impediment. But because we're following Michael, this guy's annoying.
She's put in 5 years. Like, fucking shut up.
I know. But narratively, I get what you're saying. But also, having her take a taste of her own medicine and having Vance say, I don't know, you guys figure it out. I don't want to babysit you two. I kind of like that.
I would have taken like 3 seconds to do it, Vance. I don't want to. I want to go get drunk with Tilly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, we've seen Trek episodes where the Admiral or whoever's in charge says, okay, you're both working on this, but Captain Picard, you take point.
Yeah.
Like, you make it clear who's actually running the show, and he didn't do that. Yeah. No, I get it. I get why you were annoyed. You were right to be annoyed, but I get it. I also understand what they were trying to do. I don't know that they pulled it off, but I could see.
Well, so, and the other thing is that, like, the whole end action sequence is just directly from, like, this guy's stupid plan. His stupid plan works, but then, like, the criminals get the idea to do his stupid plan harder.
Yeah, he's like, why don't we shoot a torpedo at them? Mm. And they're like, but it might cause an avalanche that wrecks this city. And he's like, no, it won't. And it didn't.
He's literally like, this is a red directive. We don't have time to make sure that people aren't going to die.
Well, what he said was there's a 30% chance. And how many times have we seen Starfleet captains who are our heroes saying, I can deal with a 30% chance? And we know narratively that's never going to happen.
I don't
know. Like 30% means 0%.
I don't know. It's fine when you're going to put your crew in danger. That's the job. But like, if you're going to blow up a village, like, I'm going to be pretty annoyed about it.
We've definitely seen Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, all those guys like hear the exact same thing and say, well, I'm going to take that risk. And it works out. But again, because he's not our hero, it's annoying. But
he's
then,
an asshole.
Like you say, the criminals say, oh, shooting a torpedo, causing an avalanche. What a good idea to cover our escape.
Yep. Nice one, idiots.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. We got out of here.
Yep.
Oh, God, I hate them.
Yeah, me too.
So annoying. Everyone's annoying.
It's pretty annoying. There was some good stuff, though.
There was some good stuff. I'm going to look at my notes here.
Well, my good thing.
Yes.
Pretty much the only thing I knew going into this season was that it ties into one of my very favorite TNG episodes,
yes.
The Chase, I mentioned a minute ago. The last 5 minutes of this otherwise forgettable episode were very exciting to me, where Dr. Director David Cronenberg says, look, there was this secret fucking classified mission 800 years ago that the Romulans and the Klingons and the Cardassians and Starfleet all were involved with, and they found these guys, and this happened. I'm like, oh, yes. And I actually went back to our old notes from that episode where my bad thing was, this is such a big, cool idea, and it needs more room. And now we're getting that. Like, it took them, you know, 30 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But that big, cool idea finally has some room to breathe. And
I mean, that's the thing. It's a great thing to hang the series on.
Yeah.
You know, or the season.
And, like, when they said this Romulan ship, this derelict Romulan ship we're going after from 800 years ago, I'm like, wait a minute. 800 years is roughly the next gen era.
Yeah.
And they did a good job recreating what a Romulan ship looked like then, like in next gen, and like the dumb shoulder pad outfits, and like they didn't go back and reinvent it. Instead, they're like, no, this is what it looked like. And they showed us like some stills from the episode, and she even got to see a shot of Picard, and it wasn't overplayed like on Lower Decks where they would just look at him with hearts in their eyes for 10 minutes. It was just
I was so expecting her to go like, oh, yes, of course I've heard of Jean-Luc Picard.
No, she's probably heard of him.
Well, at this point, yes, but
she's been in the future for like 2 years, but but otherwise, you know, but he's like, yeah, this Starfleet captain, and that's it. Like, I don't even think they say his name, like, was involved, and like, yay, I love
there
that. I love that they're doing this. This is a good idea, but
see,
the way they
subtlety
got into this
Lower Decks.
And the subtlety from this show?
Yeah, seriously.
The least subtle show?
The show that opened up with a Starfleet captain riding a ship? No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeehaw.
The show that kicked off the whole series with two people drawing a giant Starfleet insignia on the ground.
I do still love that.
It made zero sense.
Of course it made zero sense, but also...
But no, I like what this is shaping up to be. There's one more thing I know about the season, and I thought we were going to get to it here, and it's when we find out who Cronenberg actually is, and it's going to annoy me, but we'll get to it when it happens. Everything else, I got no idea where they're going with any of this. I guess what they're chasing is more technology from this ancient race. Like, if they were able to seed the galaxy with DNA, they probably could do other shit, and like, it's probably dangerous. I don't know.
They also have the Genesis device or something.
But Genesis is Planet Forbidden.
I know that, and you know that, but you know who doesn't know that? Two criminals.
Oh, you mean Maul and Locke?
They don't care that it's Planet Forbidden. They're going to go there anyway, because they're just jerks.
And they're in love.
They're going to go to that planet and go, I love being on this planet I'm not supposed to be on. Let's make out.
And let's kill this guy who looks like Data.
I love killing guys with you, baby.
You should do that right into the microphone. People are going to love that.
Yeah, I bet.
They're not.
They'll hate it.
I'm on the subreddit for audio dramas, like production, and like people talk about, like, please don't have characters eating or kissing into the microphone. I hate it so much. There's a lot of people complaining about that.
Sorry, I was just about to eat my peanut butter sandwich and
stir some macaroni right. Yep. What was your good thing?
This episode ends with T'Lyn proposing to Saru, and that just made me so fucking happy.
So Saru has been offered a diplomatic post. He's got to leave Starfleet to become a diplomat, and if he does that, he gets stationed at Federation headquarters where he gets to see T'Lyn more. And she says, you need to consider your career options, but not include our relationship as part of that. Like, you need to, it's a very Vulcan thing to say.
Like, yeah, absolutely. Like,
don't let your emotional connection to me affect what your career decision is. And he goes through what he goes through in the episode and comes back to her and says, I have to consider that. This is important to me. I'm in love with you. And she's like, well, in that case, let's get married.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh my God.
Yep. It's so sweet. I continue. This... Oh, God.
Sorry, if this season and therefore series ends with like an elaborate wedding for those two, I'm going to be so happy.
I don't want that to happen at the end. I want it to happen like in a week or two.
That's fine too.
Like I want them to continue to be happy together. You know, I it doesn't need to end that way. You know what I mean? Like do it in a couple of weeks and then keep going. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. No, and their love story is easily the sweetest thing of this whole series. And so like good. Paul and Hugh are pretty cute, but sorry, these two do it. Also,
yeah, no, they win.
Tilly's apparently got a crush at Starfleet at Federation headquarters, which is very cute.
Oh yeah, that was also very boy I like.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
and he's clearly into her, but she's like. And remember at the end of last season, I was saying like they're writing her a little more mature and they're still doing that. But also she's a little drunk and a little shy because of her crush. And she started acting like old Tilly and it fit there. It wasn't like, oh, she's sliding back. It's like, no, of course. Cute boy, drunk, doesn't know what to do.
Hey, buddy.
Also works with him. So like if she fucks it up, she's got to live with that every day. Yeah. Like I get it.
Also really like the bit where she's just like, I can't just keep sending cadets to moons that almost kill them. Can I keep sending cadets to moons that almost kill them?
I like, there's a very different vibe watching her do this job now. I like it.
Yeah, I really agree. You know, like...
She's kind of in charge of all this is one of the things.
Yeah. It's kind of great.
Yeah.
And like, if this is the direction and the character we're getting on that Starfleet Academy show, I'm pretty stoked about that.
And I hope she continues to be a presence in this show. Michael calls back and says, look... This has to be off the books. You're technically not Starfleet anymore. Can you help me with this? And she's like, of course I will.
Yeah. And Admiral Vance fucking knows that. He's like,
So she starts hacking.
Yeah.
She starts hacking into the mainframe. Mm-hmm. And right before she says, I'm in, which you have to do, you know, it's the law, to like young, hot security people. Sorry, that's redundant. Everyone on the show is young and hot.
Yep.
Two security people come in and say, you are hacking into the mainframe. You are not in. You are, in fact, under arrest. And then Vance says, you guys go take a walk. I got this.
Settle down, guys. She's illegally hacking under my jurisdiction.
And then the door closes. And he's like, Cronenberg didn't tell me either. What did you find?
Mm-hmm.
It's so cute. Like, after they bonded last season, it's nice that he's like, no, you're cool, and I understand why Michael's doing this, and also I want to know what the fuck's going on. Please,
we are best friends now.
Mm-hmm. But I like that while she doesn't get to see her old disco friends that much, like directly, she talks to them on the phone. But like she's got Vance, like that's good. She's got an ally here, you know.
I will say this though, the part where Michael calls her right after her boots her boyfriend out of her room or whatever, and just basically like lies on the bed like the monarch, kicking her feet up, just like Michael,
she's on her princess phone.
Yep. How's it going, buddy?
Oh, she's still a little drunk, and she's like, "It's hot in here." Oh, you're not here. Never mind. Cute.
Oh, I love her.
Also, your notes, and I agree with you. Say her hair exploded. Like
fucking did.
They let her curls just go wherever they want, and I love it. She looks like fucking, what's the Disney, is it Tangled? Is that the Rapunzel they did?
Yeah, Tangled.
Yeah. Yeah. She just got the huge hair.
Like Cousin It sitting on her shoulders, just like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She's great.
Mm-hmm.
Still great.
Added like another 2 feet to her. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yep. Also, you know, never know how to talk about this, but she's put on some weight and it looks good on her.
That's real hot.
Yeah. Like, you know, I want to be clear. I'm 100% pro fat Tilly. I just don't want to come off like, oh, she got fat. Like, no, it's not that. She looks great, but she looks very different.
Yeah.
Like it's a considerable amount of weight.
I also feel like they might be doing her makeup differently or something. I don't know.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Thilo pointed out it's hard for me to clock this because it's curl, the hair's curly, but she's got bangs, which is very different look for other people. So you know,
bangs. I can't make that shit work.
Mm-hmm. All right. What else?
What else?
Oh, they've the whole Disco's the only one with a spore drive thing. Everyone else has a Pathfinder drive now, which I think is something that came up in Voyager, actually. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice bit of continuity.
They mentioned that at some point. Like, I'm sure I remember that. Or the Slipstream drive, is that?
I think they're the same thing. I think Pathfinder is a Slipstream. I might be wrong about that. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, the whole fleet has solved the post-burn. We can't do warp anymore. They got a different kind of drive. And the result is Paul is like, but being the only guy who knew about the spore drive made me special, and now nobody wants that. What the fuck am I going to do with my life now?
Discovery doesn't need like a mushroom guy anymore if we're not using.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they still have a spore drive like Disco does. They still need him to run that. It's just he's not the savior of the fleet anymore. He's just one guy on one ship again.
Adira basically goes like, "Oh, buddy, that's okay. The Discovery's always going to be special, though."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Hugh is like, "Oh, now I have to." Now I have to tell him that it's okay that you're not Mozart or whatever.
No, this is the thing. And, like, this results in him having that scene where he's, like, looking at the Soong android and being like, that's legacy. That's someone who was remembered. I'm like, all right, is this what we're doing this year, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
This is your thing?
I don't know. I think
2,000-foot-tall statue breathing fire and going, remember me.
I don't know. He definitely seems like the type, although I feel like the cautionary tale of Tarka would maybe make him back off. Like, that's when you're a genius to the point of being an absolute prick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, maybe back off a little.
It's also perfectly in character for Stamets to go, but that won't happen to me.
Uh-huh, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching this with Amanda and Tilo, and they missed the finale of previous season. And they're like, wait a minute, how is Book still free?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, for almost blowing up the galaxy, he got community service. It's fine.
Time served in community service. Like,
I mean, he did convince those guys.
Cool, so.
He did convince those guys to turn off their genocidal mining machine. So I guess he earned it a little bit.
All right, fine.
Yeah. I mentioned this a little bit. I did like the Michael riding the ship in warp, and it also results in when the ship comes out of warp and she's falling very fast into Disco, and then they just transport her when she's within an inch of the wall. So what it looks like is she just went right through the wall, and it was that was a good action sequence.
I like that quite a bit.
Yeah. Like, most of the action stuff I found very tedious, but also I'm certain there's nerds out there who are like, you can't be in the warp bubble or you will disintegrate.
Shut up.
It's all
nerds.
Made up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the future. It's different.
Yeah, no, it's not. They're using old warp technology, they said. But nevertheless,
all right, well, it's the future.
Still cool.
It's not different.
Yeah. But it's also made up. There's no such thing as warp drive. You could, like, who cares?
That sequence also has Michael getting nailed by a meteorite and going, that didn't feel good, which just
there was a lot of that corny dialogue,
Someone showed the writers a bunch of Marvel movies and said, this is popular, do this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that brings us back to Joss Whedon, unfortunately, because, like, he started that with the Avengers.
Yep. This is popular. Do this.
Uh-huh. But, I mean, also, like, after they get away, the captain of the other ship says something about a shit Sunday. And, like, shut up.
He also says for the win at one point, and I just really wanted to punch his face.
Yeah. See, it bothers you, too. You just draw the line a little further in.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's there.
Yeah. What else?
See, this is what I'm talking about. I didn't hate the episode, but so much of it was just so annoying to me.
Yeah, and I don't want to speak for you, but for me, sometimes when I find everything and something's bothering me, it's like, oh, is it me? Am I just very irritable today?
I might just be in a bad mood, and honestly, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but sometimes a good Star Trek episode can kick me out of that.
Yeah.
If something really cool happens, I'm like, yay, this is why I do this. Mm-hmm. And there were glimmers of that. There wasn't enough of it. But the last 5 minutes did that for me.
This was a lot of Star Trek trying to be Star Wars. And I fucking hate when Star Trek tries to be Star Wars.
The thing is, Star Wars is a massive franchise that has spanned like 12 movies and and like 10 TV series. Like, there's stuff you can borrow from that you could probably get away with, but they're doing the same shit. They're doing the go to the desert planet and do a speeder bike chase.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, that's like number one and number two Star Wars shit, you know?
No, I would say the space battles would be like number one, but after that.
Okay, fair. You talk about the Star Wars?
Well, like, you, in the last season of Picard, liked the Death Star run that they did on the Borg. Like, I think that's the number one Star Wars thing.
That is the, yeah.
But, you know, desert planet, and then I know the speeder bikes were on Endor, fucking nerds. I was watching this shit 40 years ago. Yeah. But, like...
Don't write to me.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about it.
But the high speed, like, okay, yeah, I get it. And whatever. Some of the music even got real Star Wars-y, and just, it was tedious. You guys can do better. I know you can do better. We just saw you do better.
Yeah, you did a great season, for the most part. Great season.
The last third of the season was great.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. This season, though, I don't think we talked about this when the show started, like, is only 10 episodes long. Like,
yes.
Shorter than the previous ones, which means they got to get to the point a lot quicker.
I was gonna say, I hope that means they won't spend too much time fucking around, but they spent like half this episode fucking around, so
yeah. But
I guess we'll see.
This felt like every first episode. Like, it felt like the first episode is no, that's not true. It didn't feel like the first episode of season three. I loved that one.
Yeah,
where Michael's in the future looking around and meets Book for the first time. That was
a good one.
That's
a great episode.
But usually their first episodes are like, here's the new status quo. Here's what's going on since last season. Like, here's where all the relationships are. Here's slowly setting up what the season's about. And it's usually kind of tedious. And that's what we got here. What else? They mentioned self-sealing stem bolts. And I'm,
happy.
I'm not immune to fan service. That works,
I'm not
too.
Made of stone.
Oh,
they also show a Tribble crawling around for no reason, which I'm just like...
Yeah, I'm getting tired of that one. There's other things, man. There's other things. The data type character, Fred.
Yeah.
And they milk as many laughs as you possibly can out of him being called Fred, which I thought it was funny the first time, but then they basically keep turning to the camera and saying, Fred.
You believe this guy's name is Fred? Fred.
Okay, yeah, I get it. I got it.
Yeah.
Thanks. But they did a bit where he's flipping through the Grail Diary very fast. And they speed the film up, and it looks like a fucking Buster Keaton. Like, has this effect not gotten better in 100 years? It still looks like you sped the film up. Just did not look good.
Someone's drawn like a little dancing guy on the lower page. It's a flip book. You cannot improve upon the flip book at all. It is the perfect technology.
I mean, that's true. And that train's gonna hit it. Oh wait, no.
Oh no.
It's okay. It's fine.
There goes a guy on a horse.
What else? Here's a note that I had. Maybe do another hour of people screaming in the sand. It's thrilling.
People love it.
Yeah. I think that's about all I had. You got, more?
No.
Oh. Michael mentions, like, in one of her flippant, that with a dry, cool wit like that, I could be an action hero. Her dumb one-liners says, I got a saxophone lesson. Since when?
Yeah, right?
When did she play the saxophone? Where did that come from?
I will say this. If this season has her playing the saxophone, I'm going to like it a lot more.
I will have no opinion of that. But, I mean, she's allowed to develop new interests. It just came out of nowhere.
No, I just, like, I want to cut to her in her quarters going, saxophone.
Yeah, that would be okay. Okay, I think what bothers me about it is it feels like some Trek writer somewhere looked at a list of, like, okay, Riker played the trombone, and Harry Kim played the clarinet, and so on and so on. No one's played the saxophone yet. We'll use that.
That's real fucking lower decks writing.
It's like at the beginning, they're having a little, they're at a little soiree to celebrate the Federation's whatever anniversary, and they name drop a couple of dates, like, this celebrates the anniversary, and it's like, I think Next Gen did this, and it bothered me then, too. It's like, clearly whoever the Okudas, the guys who were working on the husband and wife who were working on the Star Trek encyclopedia, wanted to fill in the gap in the Star Trek chronology book. And they're like, can we have someone on screen say when the date is for this so we can codify that? And it's like, it felt like that. It didn't feel narratively.
Alpha.
Yeah. Like, this has always been a missing gap. What if we just have someone say, and on 2149, oh, Jesus Christ, shut up. It's not, that detail was so awkward. It was clearly just there so we would know it.
Ugh. It also followed up with them drinking the drinks with the bubble on the top. And don't pop my bubble. I want to do that.
I like.
Fuck, man.
Adira is like, yeah, but what's the blue stuff? Well, it's a star, like in the stars in the Federation flag. I'm like, no, they're saying, what is this gunk in my drink? Not what does it symbolize?
Mm-hmm.
Follow the conversation here.
Look, I'm allergic to a lot of things. Do you need to tell me what the... No, it's a beautiful star as reflecting the stars we trek around. Okay, no, but I have a list of dietary concerns, so like...
Also, I find things like boba tea a little gross. I don't want like thick things in my drink.
Oh,
can you tell me what this is?
Yeah, boba tea.
Well, it's a star. No, it's not literally a star. What is it made of?
Yeah.
We are all made of star stuff. Okay, fucking...
All right.
Carl Sagan.
The last episode of the series ended with the pale blue... Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you take a walk, Carl?
Engorged gourds. Go buy some more turtlenecks.
I already bought all of the turtlenecks which are available in this galaxy.
Well, hope my son doesn't start writing for Voyager.
Oh, no.
Well, too late. Mm-hmm. Hi-ho, Carl Sagan here.
You are with us now.
All right. Oh, I've asked this before, and I still don't know. Who is head of Discovery on Disco now that Nan's gone?
I don't know.
Like, they made a point of telling us who the head of security was. What's her name who got killed by Ripper back in season one? Like, she had a name.
Yeah,
and
I don't
know. And
then Nan
was there. And, like, now I don't know who it is.
I just, like, the crew is so fucking weird on this show. Like, it doesn't click in with, like... most Star Trek, which is fine, but it always throws me off.
When Michael goes to the Romulan ship, she brings Owoshikun and
a
Reese.
Different person. Yeah,
Reese. Mm-hmm. I did finally figure out which one was which.
Oh, well, it took us five seasons.
Yeah, but I don't have a good way of. It's all inside my head. I don't have a good way of communicating it. That one's Reese, Maggie. Does that help you?
Yeah, no. I need some kind of mnemonic or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't have one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I usually do, but in this case, I don't. Or I do, and it's racist. No, not that one. I didn't mean for it to be. Anyway, but she brings them, and I'm like, wait, they're both bridge officers.
Yeah.
So who's the security? Like, you're supposed to bring the security guy with you if there's a security risk. Who is that?
Yeah, it feels like no one sort of has any jobs on the bridge. They're just sort of around.
No, like, Detmer and Owoshikun definitely have the Sulu and Chekhov spots.
But, like, they'll do that thing where, like, everyone on the bridge will shout, like, a random thing.
Yep.
As, well, everyone, like, I'm helping too, remember me?
Everyone behind Michael, I don't think has... They probably have said it out loud or memory out. Like someone, some nerd can say, oh, well, that person is ops and that person is this or that. That's fine. But narratively, they haven't made it very clear who does what job.
Yeah.
Like story wise, maybe in technical, you've read all the technical manuals, Worf's dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know who does what. But like when a plot point comes up, I don't know which character is obviously going to respond to it because they haven't made that clear. Like think about the Enterprise D. You always knew. If something needed to be shot at, Worf would be the one speaking up saying, we need to shoot at it.
Yeah, he loved
it. And yeah, it was very easy to tell whose job was what. And here, everyone behind Michael, who knows?
Yeah, just sort of milling about.
Well, they're all doing stuff, but who knows what it is? Also, we definitely have new people, and I don't know who they are or what their deal is, and we're not going to know.
Great.
So.
More people I need to remember the name of.
Not really.
No.
We know Detmer because she's great, and we know Owoshikun because she's great, and the rest of them are also
and
there.
The rest of
there's
these
Bryce
are
Reese.
The mystery crew.
Arium, not Arium.
Arium 2.
There's Christopher now.
Terrarium.
Yes, that's it. Terrarium. All right. Anything else?
I think that's everything.
Varwell. Oh, they name-checked the Tholians and the Breen.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, if the Federation falls apart, then the Tholians are the... Like, oh, we're still dealing with some of the same guys. That's
Tholians
cool.
Tholians are still showing up to be assholes, huh?
And that did remind me, one other thing I know about this season is apparently we get to see what's under the Breen's helmets, and I hope that's not as irritating as I think it's going to be.
I mean, the way this season has started, it's probably going to be the most irritating thing.
Yeah, but this show doesn't do the Enterprise augment storyline, for instance, where everything needs a perfect explanation. Like,
sure.
Like, here's something we needed to explain. What do they look like? Just leave it. It's okay. Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Like, we didn't need to know where the Tribbles came from. That was kind of a cute short, but I could have done without that.
Yeah, that's fine. Like, you know.
It's space. They're just animals. It's fine.
Yeah, sometimes weird things happen in space.
Yeah. Every time you say, no, a guy did it, that makes it less. Mm-hmm. It's like how every, you know, important thing in history was done by some time traveler from the future or some immortal being. Like, good people in human history? Really?
Listen, everything that has ever happened in all of Star Trek was done by someone from the Soong family.
Someone from the Soong family, some immortal. Mm-hmm. Who's still around in the far future, or some far future time traveler.
Mm-hmm. Or a combination of all three.
Yeah.
I'm traveling Soong, the space traveler from out of time.
Well, I'm traveling Soong, come to town on a railroad car. All right, anything else?
That's all I got.
Very well. Well, it's always nice to hear from a Soong.
No, it isn't.
I know.
I hope I never hear from another Soong again.
That would be nice. Like, Soonger Spiner, the better. Spiner, I wish you continued success and a long and prosperous rest of your life, but you could retire now.
Yes, please.
Like, there's one particular lingering person in Star Trek lore, and I won't say who it is out loud, because I generally don't wish actual physical harm upon people, but there's one particular person I wish would just die already, and I'm not going to say who it is, but you know who it is.
I do know who it is. We've talked about this.
But I don't wish that on Brent Spiner. I just wish he'd not do Star Trek anymore.
Yeah.
All right.
Go back to playing people on Night Court. Night Court's back now. Go be on Night Court.
But I'm feeling much better now. All right. That's all for this time. As ever, the website, postatomichorror.com. If you want to write to us, postatomichorror@gmail.com. We also we're not far from our mail show, actually, because this season is only 10 episodes. That means we're like 9 weeks away from it.
Yeah. So
if you got anything to say, please write to us.
Send us some mail.
We are reviewing Lower Decks. We're now into season 3 on our Patreon, patreon.com/algar. Donate as little as a buck and you get that. And I think that's all for this time. Oh, yeah. And next time we're doing Under the Twin Moons, if that
Under the
means
Twin
anything.
Moons.
Sure. Anyway, so that's all for this time.
Yeah, see you, folks.
The Postatomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2025. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.